White.
Whittle's a nice place. Kinda, not really. White.
Everyone relax. We now know how Jeffrey Epstein managed to kill himself, and it's a trust me, bro, from Kash Patel and Dan Bongino.
You yes, did so good. Yeah.
Good job, Dave.
Good yeah. job, Dave.
Yeah, you guys did a great job. They've reviewed the case and assured us the Epstein Five Eyes Intel op is nothing but a nothing burger.
Oh, good. Well, it's I'm so glad burger. That case is closed. Thanks.
No, they're there.
Thanks,
yeah.
everybody.
Also, the assassination. Nothing to really think about.
Same with JFK.
Whatever
right,
you do.
Probably.
Hey, whatever you do, don't think about it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't want to be thinking about it.
Don't think too hard.
Or ask questions about
no.
it.
No.
Yeah. Bad idea.
I would never ask questions.
Don't ask questions.
I would never do such a thing.
Absolutely not.
I've been warned against such problematic behavior.
It really is a problem, and I'm assured that we're going to be taken off the air any day now for having done such questioning of the narrative for so long now. And that is exactly what we do here. Thank you so much for joining us. Human Reaction Podcast, back at you on a Tuesday evening. David Rand, Kyle Mack, I'm Joe Sheehan. Our brother Bennett is out there somewhere. I'm sure he'll find his way home eventually. Or not.
You. Moment of quiet.
Moment of silence for Bennett. Here we go. All right, that's good.
Game!
I touched the button this randomly.
David just absolutely hook-shotted the perfect button. You should just... This is here for you now.
Yeah, just reach over.
But just you can't look. Yeah.
David's just blind button pressing right now. Let's see what happens.
Oh, I love it. Well, while we have your attention, please do leave a comment under the show.
Like
under,
and subscribe,
under the video.
Too.
Yeah.
Like and subscribe. Hit the notification bell. We have so much content coming out all the time. You do not want to miss it. And whoever's first into the comments on this episode gets a free sticker pack sent to their door. We'll connect on the details after we see the comment come in. You probably have to join our Discord to do that. Link is in the description.
Heck yeah.
Yeah. Oh, and so I guess starting out the episode here is we got a juicy little meme here.
Trust me, bro.
Just wanted everybody to know that Epstein killed himself. Trust me, bro.
You can never get enough of that look, man. That look is so intense.
No, you can't. There it is.
Wow.
There's something about some of the people in the Trump administration just have these crazy eyes, and I don't know what's going on there. Kash Patel is one of those people. JD Vance has kind of some weird, like, eyeliner eyes. I don't know what's happening there.
David, what button best describes Kash Patel's eyes here?
Oh, jeez.
That doesn't have anything on it.
We are a professional program here.
He has got real John Cena energy in those eyes,
doesn't he? Yeah.
We are professionals.
Get you energized.
So Kash Patel and Dan Bongino are doing this like police week, and they're just like, everything's fine, guys. There's going to be a bunch of stuff coming in 2 weeks, maybe, sort of.
The adults are in town, though.
I'm going to come.
Yeah, you know... The adults are in the room. We got Kash Patel
and
Bongino in the room.
Not in this
room. No, but they are at the FBI now. And don't ask questions.
Right. So is this the biggest disappointment we could get from Kash Patel?
Let's see if there is anything that actually comes out. Like I am feeling a little bit of weariness that's going on, especially from what we had with AG Bondi and the Epstein stuff, where they just like gave a bunch of binders that got us nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, trust me, it's on my desk. And it's like, then it wasn't there. And then there was like this weird civil war with the FBI going on in the Southern District of New York. And I just feel like I'm tired of waiting.
Well, yeah. And I mean, I suppose to steel man their side of things, we've talked about this. It does take time for these investigations to go on. They don't want to reveal anything before it's all fully fleshed out in case there is something there. They don't want to, you know, fumble the ball.
There's
in
a lot
case.
Of stuff in courts and things like that, too, where they can't get ahead of things. So you kind of have to give them the benefit of the doubt there. But it's just like,
I think
a lot of people are weary and they want more.
Well,
you know what I mean?
And also they do that while they're saying also... The assassination was no big deal, and Epstein didn't, you know, kill himself.
Yeah.
Right? Like, and then provide nothing to actually allay those fears other than trust me, bro. Right.
Yeah.
So
it is
I've
a very
seen
trust
the files,
me, bro.
It's totally, he totally killed himself. Yeah.
I've seen the files.
Yeah. Bongino's just like, if something was there, I would tell you. I don't know why I went Trump there.
It's very Trumpian.
Yeah.
Right.
It is. Yeah.
But let's start off. We're going to go through some of the interview. We got a bunch of clips from it. So we will react as we go along. So here is kind of towards the beginning here. With what's her name? Maria Bartiromo. from Fox Business.
What's her name, David?
Maria Bartiromo. Bartiromo. Bartiromo.
Here we go.
That the FBI has been politicized. Mm-hmm. So what are your plans to rebuild trust in this fine institution and depoliticize the FBI?
So we have a multi-part process. First of all, our priorities. Simple. Crush violent crime. Defend the homeland. Rigorous organizational accountability. And the fourth, which leads directly to your question, aggressive constitutional oversight with Congress. The way we rebuild trust is we already have the men and women here in the rank and file that signed up to be cops, that signed up to be intel analysts, that signed up to be special support staff, that want to do the work. That's why we're sending them into the field. We can talk about that later. What we need America to know is that this place was politicized, and Congress has rightfully requested the documents from Crossfire Hurricane to January 6th to the Richmond Catholic memo and so much more. But now finally Americans are reading for themselves the documentation where a very select few leaders in the former FBI decided to politicize it. We don't need me and the deputy telling you it's politicized. We want the American people to read it, and now they are.
So what is really the contention here that I can see is the very select few words, right? Where it wasn't long ago that Bongino was saying, we need to just gut the FBI, right? That means
cash too.
Yeah. And now it's very select few were politicized, but the rest are all great. And in fact, you don't even have to respond to Doge's five, you know, things you did this week email because cash is on it. And this is where, if you're at all skeptical of these figures, as there are now political actors, not figures on the outside, that you would say maybe you're responding to different incentives. Maybe you're no longer quite the same as you were. And I think that's a reasonable response. That's the sense of which I think it's most disappointing for the people who supported Trump, supported these guys' nomination, is where the firing's at. Where's the accountability at? Was it really very select for you, or was it all the people who said, I'm going to take the shot. I'm not going to complain about it. I'm going to go along with all the stuff, the DEI bullshit, all the things that happened to the FBI in the last 4 years, including the politicization of so many of these things. They didn't resign, yet they all executed it. They didn't, in this interview, own how many people they fired. Because that's what people really want. Right?
Like, yeah, accountability.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. It's one thing to release Crossfire Hurricane, which is, for you guys, I mean, just remind everybody, is the Russia collusion hoax. And that whole story that never happened. If that was an operation, what happened to the people who did the operation? Right? Because I assure you, is it possible that it was only a select few?
Possible?
Yeah. If they didn't resign, were they complicit?
I would say I do imagine that it's probably likely that it is a select few because that is kind of how these factions tend to work. Like the average person at the FBI or the CIA is not involved in most of these shenanigans oftentimes.
Well, we're talking about,
you do have to like dig up who those people were, and a lot of them are probably gone. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, there are thousands, tens of thousands at the FBI headquarters in DC who did nothing when all these things were implemented, right? Who didn't hold account the politicalization or resign in protest or doing those things. So what are we talking about? Just how much do we need to pull back? And what I feel like is we're getting rug pulled here, right?
It does feel like that.
Where it's like, we need systematic reform and we need to gut the FBI and we're going to close down the building and blah, 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 blah.
He is closing the building though, right?
We'll get into that. Okay. Yeah, there's a part on that, but yeah.
Well, I mean, I guess one thing I'm wondering here is how many of the various security clearances that were revoked early on in the administration, like the first few days, mm-hmm. were some of these people in the higher levels at the FBI or other intel agencies or other parts of the government that were a part of some of those things that just got booted immediately?
Like they were the most important people.
Has that kind of been like, have the heads of the snakes been chopped off already?
Well,
maybe?
I mean, for example, and one of the things they actually get into here that we're not going to react to, but I'll just cite real quick, is one of the guys who was the head of the prosecution of the J6ers was actually promoted by Kash Patel.
Really?
Yes. And now they defend him as, well, he actually objected to doing that, but he followed orders. And that's the problem.
Just following orders.
Just following orders is an excuse that they are willing to tolerate. Rather than, you violated the Constitution, I'm sorry, you're fired.
Yeah. Where do your orders come from? right? Is it a fallible person who is your superior, whom you look to for, I mean, yes, your job security, your potential next promotion, or is it the higher calling of the role that the American people have entrusted you to do?
Yep. Yep. Or where you were asked to collect data on the people who are avoiding vaccines, right? If you were doing that, is there accountability for you? And who is the analyst who did that, right?
But you have to ask, though, too, like, as a mid-level or low-level analyst who's just doing their job, like, literally, and maybe not knowing the context of why they're doing their job. It's just like, orders passed down, look into this person, prepare a dossier, pass it up the chain.
Sure.
Because you're like, how much accountability do they need to have for these things when they weren't the ones orchestrating or masterminding necessarily? They were literally just punching keys on a computer and passing files off.
There's a lot of paper pushers. Are those guys responsible necessarily? And like, do those guys deserve to be fired, or are they just following the culture that is in place?
And if they were to quit and protest, like, what effect would that have on an agency of 10,000 plus employees? Like, maybe not a lot.
Yeah.
Quite a bit. That's the question. If you go on TV and say they are doing this and it was wrong.
That's fair.
If you whistleblow, it's a very different thing. Even low-level whistleblowers can get relatively popular online.
Yeah, but on top of that, a lot of them get their lives ruined.
I mean, of course they are.
Yeah, of course they do.
Like, I don't expect most people to.
You went to work for an intel agency, and then you were asked to do something unconstitutional.
Yeah.
Right.
But we're talking about incentives here that are not aligned to promote honesty within these agencies.
100%. And the difference is the description of the condition, right? Which is what you're doing, right? You're saying, like, they're just punching keys and keyboard. Yeah, I get that. And there's the is, right? And there's the ought.
Sure.
What ought be our standard? And our standard should be, if you don't stand up and do something, you're fired.
I mean, I don't disagree with you.
That's the appropriate incentives, yes. Right? Especially because, I mean, we found this out, and I didn't know this. There's only a 5-year statute of limitations on unconstitutional things that the FBI did in Crossfire Hurricane.
Really?
They framed a sitting president, and they can't be prosecuted for it because there's a 5-year thing for that.
Go, David. Go.
That's all I had to say. You're a little too soft.
But
you see what I mean? Like those kinds of things, and there's no consequence. Yeah. Well, we can't prosecute him, so you know. And I don't even know if they could fire him. There's union rules and stuff like that. But I'm like saying, I'm trying to articulate a high standard because I feel like the entire goal of this interview, as you will see as we go through it, is to lower everyone's standards and expectations.
For sure. For sure. Yeah. Let's keep playing.
The good guys are here now.
Next up we got...
We weren't here in the FBI in the last 5 years when we had statute of limitations that were still in play where we could have investigated criminal conduct. Most of these statute of limitations are 5 years old. And we will investigate criminal conduct where we find a righteous case to do so and the law and the facts allow us to. But a lot of it we're precluded from. So we'll take the criticism, and it's rightfully so. That could we have done more in the past? Sure, people before us could have. But what we can do now is continue to put out the documents and the information that these people withheld from the American public. And I'm just telling you right now, as much as we know about Crossfire Hurricane, he and I just found out more last week. And we're continuing to work with Congress to put those documents out. That's how vindictive and vicious the former leadership structure here was. Not only did they bastardize the FISA process and lie to the American public, they withheld and hid documentation and put it in rooms where people weren't supposed to look. And it's a good thing we're here now to clean it up, and you're about to see a wave of transparency.
What do you mean?
Just give us about a week or two.
Okay.
Just another week or two, guys.
It's in the mail.
All the docs are going to drop. You're going to see.
Well, they're sooning so hard right now.
They really are. I hope he's right, but I'm also incredibly skeptical because of all the other things that happened in this interview. Right.
Right.
When you're watching it, you're kind of like, ooh, okay, all
right.
I'm with you. And then it gets towards the end, and you guys are going to see like the letdown. And you're just like, I don't believe anything now. Like at this point, rewatching it now, I'm like, I don't know if it's going to be there.
That's how I feel with everything that's going on with the Attorney General and the FBI in particular. It's just like everything is just like soon, and then you're like, okay, I'm waiting.
It's been soon for a while now.
Like I just keep getting the same response there, and we're like, I get what he's saying there, where they probably had to do all this cleanup internally, and I think guys like RFK had to do this with HHS too, and are probably still going through the same problems right now, where there's just all this messiness that exists on the inside with this. And there was a civil war that was going on with that Southern District of New York office, right? So like all that stuff I completely get. And I understand that is on the steel man side, a reason for the delay that makes sense to me. But it is just one of those things where it's like, I need a little bit, like drop me a little bit here so I can, feel like the faith in you is warranted.
Dude, you got the binders. Like 6 or 7 influencers got binders. That's enough. You should be satiated.
Yeah.
Go back to sleep.
With all documents that I've read before.
Yeah. Well, and documents that were more redacted than the releases that we had back in 2015.
Those were leaked documents. That's why they weren't redacted.
Exactly.
So, yeah, like we had unredacted documents before.
They're already out there.
Yeah. And they gave us redacted ones, knowing that's already out there.
Well, and they redacted like addresses of people and things like that. Like it was pretty, it was. All the stuff that was redacted were things that you would expect to be redacted, kind of, you know?
But you're still sitting there with, like, this obvious letdown, this media play that was we talked about and was so off-putting and terrible. But you're still left with the question of, like, okay, if they have these staffing issues that they have to deal with, and, of course, they have the day-to-day of the FBI, but the question is what are we getting to actual FBI reform and direction? Like, I love the vision, where we're going to address violent crime and illegal immigrants and stuff like that, even though some of those things are actual... not really done by you. They're done by other organizations like ICE and stuff like that. But you can see where there's cartels and stuff like that the FBI would have a role in. You're still wondering, what are we doing to actually change things at the FBI? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, your foundational, the FBI is known for, well, one of the things, unfortunately, that it does a lot of is basically setting up people to be caught, right? Spending a lot of time and human and intel, cultivating resources that then, you know, plan a terror plot, because the FBI provoked them to, asked them to, provided the information, provided the resources, provided all the things, and then caught.
Right.
Right? And then, and like, is that changing? Like, that's my concern of amongst many. And what are we doing to actually make sure that the next administration can't, you know, do the same thing that we did in the Bush administration when it was all Muslim terrorists, or the Obama administration when it was all white nationalists, or the Biden administration when it was all COVID deniers?
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
What do we do to actually stop that bullshittery?
It is funny how it's like, it just feels like it got more and more de-escalated there. Like COVID deniers is where they got to.
Well, I mean,
like de-escalated on like what like the theoretical problem could be. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. I mean, right down to parents who spoke up at school board meetings.
Exactly.
Right? Like, yeah it's getting to be just like regular people, mm-hmm. which I mean, I think we've all seen coming. I mean, the trend has only gone one direction since the Patriot Act. So.
Right.
It's going to be just all of us eventually.
Yeah, I can just see like from like the average person being like, oh, Muslim terrorists, that sounds like a bad problem. Planes, towers, yes,
yeah,
I get it.
For sure.
And it's like white nationalists. I'm like, okay, I guess that could be a problem. And then you're like COVID deniers. And you're like, what?
Huh? Or Gadsden flag owning individuals. I don't know. But what I'm specifically referring to is the Whitmore case, right?
Yeah.
Where we found out that a lot of the people were all in, who are in on the actual conspiracy, were all FBI informants.
Yeah.
So was there a conspiracy, or was it all just FBI plotting to overthrow her so they can catch them and then, you know, get the win, right? And embarrass the Republicans. Is that what was going on? And are those people going to be held accountable? Like, there's so many questions, and they answered none of them.
Yeah.
So, of course, and then they responded to Democrat attacks on them. And I thought this was particularly interesting.
FBI's prior leadership left us an institution that is a police force for America and the world that allowed a fentanyl overdose to occur and kill an American citizen every 7 minutes. That prior FBI's leadership, Comey, McCabe, left us an FBI that allowed for a woman or child to be raped every 6.5 minutes in this country. That same leadership structure left us an FBI that permitted a man or woman to be killed twice an hour in this country. That's our response to them. When I go to Congress and I go to the Hill, I say, hey, I'm not policing your neighborhood because it's a Republican or Democratic. I'm asking you for help on what your priorities are and what your resources needs are and where you need training. And we're going to send them to you. That's why we're putting 1,500 FBI employees into the field and outside of Washington, D.C. Now, if the Democrats want to play politics with that, they're the elected officials. They get to say what they want. But yelling at me and Bongino, we could take it all day long.
I don't even understand why.
One thing caught my ear and I almost ignored everything else, where he referred to the FBI as the policemen of the world.
Yeah.
Did he say that?
And the world. He says, and the world.
Yeah.
The FBI does go abroad, right?
Yep. But why?
There's the question, right?
They went to Brazil to advise
on voting
election
practices.
Engineering.
Election integrity efforts in Brazil. I remember when all the Brazil stuff was going on. I remember listening to the Schellenberger when he was at their Congress, and I was like, wait, what? What's the FBI advising on election integrity.
Yeah, that sounds like a USAID project to me.
Election integrity in Brazil.
Think of the duplication, you know? How inefficient is this government?
Isn't this redundant? We already have an agency
for that.
This
is what we do our soft power work with. Why are we using the FBI for that? Think of the airplane tickets on that. Ridiculous. Oh, get on that, Doge.
Well, it's similar. Like, we had a we had an FBI guy on here before who, that was his job, is he went around and, like, he was a RICO guy, right, for the FBI. And
gang stuff.
Yeah, doing, like, mob stuff, yeah. Like, gangs, cartel stuff, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
So, like, they go out abroad for that stuff.
But that's what the DEA is for. And other...
They work with them.
You know, but actually Wait, to be clear. The FBI is an intelligence agency and law enforcement agency for the homeland. Mm-hmm. To be clear.
Sure.
Now, sometimes things might affect the homeland from outside, like a Mexican drug cartel, and you might need to... But once again, that isn't to make the world safe. That's to make America safe. Right? Mm-hmm. And so why is his definition? It's so weird and telling that he says, and the world. Like, what is that? That's just a weird moment.
Well, David, we have U.S. interests in the Middle East, so we very well probably have U.S. interests in Brazil, don't you think? We have U.S. interests everywhere.
So once again, like, that's the role of the CIA and our external facing agencies.
That's where kind of the Vivek argument of just, like, cut out all the redundancies in these agencies. Like, you can trim everybody down and stop all the overlap. Like, it's just like there's these Venn diagrams of overlap between all the agencies. And you could probably just be like, no, just let that agency focus on that. Let that agency focus on that instead of doing this, like...
And they all coordinate through DNI, and everyone has their own job, and they do it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, ideally. But a second piece of this. Okay, so he's talking about sending 1,500 agents out into the field in the U.S., presumptively. Mm-hmm. How are you guys feeling about having more FBI just, like, roaming the streets of the United States?
Well, I mean, it depends on your view of the FBI, right? If like the view that they're trying to project is like, we're going to stop all the violent crime. And if that was what the FBI was doing, I'd be like, okay. But the FBI doesn't really do that. They kind of offer support for police on the ground to do that sort of thing. Now, there are phenomena which, you know, is more of the FBI role, especially when dealing with other sorts of support roles with state, local, and tribal, which they do address in here. And that's the next clip. But I do think, like, one, I mean, it's more sensible than keeping them in D.C., right? Like, is that better? Yeah, I think on the margin, that might be better. I would rather have people on the ground trying to solve crime, not ladder climbers in D.C., serving in D.C. One of the things they address in here, we don't actually react to it, which I thought was a really great insight, which is in the old system, and one of the reforms that I think is a good reform is in order to get promoted, you had to move to the D.C. office and out of the field.
Oh.
That's a tremendously bad incentive for doing the core work.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, getting them out to actually do that, if indeed that's what they were doing. But unfortunately, the FBI has such a terrible record of that is based, you know, my distrust of them is based in that I struggle to ask the question, you know, is it, I would rather just a total net cut of 1,500.
Well, and I think that's probably broadly the libertarian perspective is just like, well, fewer of them. Please.
Yeah. Well, because we don't need a federal police force.
Right.
We may do without it for a very long time. We don't mm-hmm. need one. We could do this with all the state and local police forces.
Yeah. Well, a lot of the problems that exist with the FBI probably are due to just bloat, which leads to mission creep on things. So, like, if you just cut it and be like, you have to live with your new budget, and then they have quotas of what they need to achieve, in theory, you would expect them to start, like, they would do a slim down and become more efficient at their direct role rather than these expansionary roles.
Totally.
Right. Well, it's a self-licking ice cream cone problem, mm-hmm. right? And then additionally that, you have the, we're going to do the thing that's hot right now, like I was saying earlier. We're going to catch terrorists during Bush. We're going to do the white nationalist during Obama. So, yeah, of course. And I did think this next part was interesting with the partnering with state and local bit.
Sorry. You have to get out there in the field, not just let the FBI agents and intel folks get out there and do the work, but partner with state and local law enforcement, which is a priority, and tribal law enforcement. That's a big, big deal for us. We are not forgetting about Indian country. They suffer from the same violent crime that we do in the rest of America, and we're going to help them. And that's how you learn the ground-based level facts that you need to deploy your assets. We're not coming up with anything fancy. We're just attacking the problem, but we're smart enough to go after the information and say, that's where the problem is because you told us it's there. Now we know we're going.
That's interesting. What about the big cities? I mean, we've heard about Tren de Aragua being in New York City.
Yeah, we're about to ruin your summer if you're a bad guy. So I'm just warning you now. I'm like, don't buy movie tickets because you're probably not going to cash them in.
Batman.
So the director and I put something together in conjunction with our DOJ partners, General Bondi and Dag Blanche, actually this morning. And if you're a violent criminal, this FBI under our leadership, we don't care who gets the credit. All we care about is making your streets safer.
This is the thing about Bongino or Bongingo, Bongino during this interview is I felt like he was very, cause like he's a former like radio guy. He's a former podcaster. Right. So he always had this like very charismatic appeal. He was like a different person in this interview. He was very like bad cop, like the aggressive cop, the no nonsense cop. That's like the attitude he put throughout this whole thing. He's just like, and he's just like giving like cheesy cop lines, like you're not going to want to buy movie tickets.
We're going to ruin your summer. Coming this summer.
Look at his face
bad
there.
Cop.
He's like
bad cop.
Very intense.
Like,
he's I am Batman. I am here to clean up the streets.
I feel like they got some media coaching out of this. It's like, all right, I'm going to figure out a good dynamic for you two on screen. I think, Cash, you're going to be good cop. Dan, why don't you take the Batman role?
It's a buddy cop movie.
It's a buddy cop movie. So
Cash and Bongino.
Which one is The Rock and which one is Kevin Hart?
I feel like Kevin Hart is I feel Cash. Like Kevin Hart is Cash. Yeah.
he's putting off Rock vibes here. For
oh
sure.
Yeah, no, yeah. Well, and he is the former Secret Service guy, right? So
that's fair.
That's fair. So one thing I did want to note about that too is I thought it was actually the first time I've ever seen the FBI emphasize to that degree Indian country and tribal relations specifically. Tribes are, for the people who are outside the United States and outside of Montana, the rural states that listen to the podcast, they are their own sovereign nation. They exist kind of nested within the government through the Bureau of Indian Affairs, but also as a sovereign entity themselves. And their relations are often directly with the FBI and receive FBI assistance in a government-to-government relationship. And there is a problem on Native American reservations that are very substantial. And he's right. There is tremendous violence there. But because it's rural and because it's Native Americans, we don't like to talk about or think about as Americans, it often goes really undercovered or undermentioned by both political actors and the media.
For sure. We've mentioned this on previous episodes. And I think even with Dan Brunner as well, that the cartel will go to the reservations, offer a Native woman $50,000 to marry him, and then he can own property there and they can like set up a base of operations, and like people go missing all the time off of Indian reservations. We have several of them in the state of Montana and it's like a huge problem. Mm-hmm. What are you grinning at over there?
Sorry,
this is a very serious topic.
Sorry, when Cash was talking about Indian country, I thought he was talking about our FBI presence abroad.
No.
I thought just Cash was watching.
I don't have a button that's bad enough for that thing you just did. David, pick one.
I know he's not this best word.
You pick two.
Well, that's about as bad as that was.
Yeah. Jesus Christ.
Sorry, I couldn't hold myself while that was like, it was just, yeah.
Fair.
It is what it is.
That's all right.
I thought he was talking about the Pakistan-India conflict.
That's okay. A very important conflict.
Sorry.
Thank goodness it's over.
They also went into talking about the assassination attempts on Trump. And this was one of those things where you're like, it's the head scratcher to me.
Yeah.
Where I just expected more, you know, and here's everybody else can kind of see why you would expect that.
How come we don't have more information on the assassination attempts on President Trump?
There's two reasons, two open ongoing prosecutions. So two of the investigations are obviously closed because the individuals are dead. But there's two live prosecutions. And so we can't get ahead of the federal court case. A lot of that information will come out in the federal court cases, but we have personally invested our time in making sure that we have looked at any possible international connections to terrorism and adversaries alike. And we've both been down to Quantico. We've both done the laboratory testing. We've both seen the explosives analysis. We've both seen the firearm and physically held it. We are all in on these investigations.
Are we going to be surprised at what you learned?
You know what, Maria?
That sigh.
Cash is not kidding. We've been personally briefed extensively on every single detail, nugget, tendril of this case. One is actively in court right now. So out of respect for the case, it's probably more appropriate that I stay quiet on that. However, I'm not going to tell people what they want to hear. I'm going to tell you the truth. And whether you like it or not is up to you. If there was a big explosive there, right? Given my history as a Secret Service agent and my personal friendship as a director does with the president, give me one logical, sensible reason we would not have. If you can think of one, there isn't. There isn't. There in some of these cases, the there you're looking for is not there. And I know people, I get it. I understand. It's not there. If it was there, we would have told you.
Well, Trust me, bro.
How many times does he say there?
It's not there. It's not there.
There with a there. Okay, so Judicial Watch has a lawsuit against the Department of Homeland Security to obtain records related to the security provided for on at Butler, right? That's that one, right? It seems that it would be illegal for them to comment on it. So how could he then say that he would tell us? So what is going on with this question? This question is very bizarre. So there's a law that says that the government can't, when you're in lawsuit with the government, it can't like demean the anyone involved with it. They can't really talk about it in order to prevent the government from biasing the court case. Sensible law.
Sure.
But I'm very curious because, okay, so with Crooks, you have the Judicial Watch. And then with, of course, with the thing in, you know, Palm Beach, Routh, for him, it's a criminal proceeding currently going on. So if Routh was, as many have suspected, a Ukrainian asset or maybe involved
or something
somehow,
adjacent.
Yeah. And some intel thing, because, and just to remind if you haven't watched the show before, you know, he kind of like went around recruiting for the CIA for Ukraine. So, yeah. I mean, once the CIA asked it, then would the CIA tell the FBI that they did that?
Well, and
do they have jurisdiction to know?
Also, having assets like that is like very convenient. You can, there's like a lot of plausible deniability that does often happen there. So it's like, would there be exact records of it? Maybe not. Yeah. That's kind of a question. Right?
I mean, the idea of the FBI spying on the CIA and then writing about it seems like a thing that could happen. But even if they did have that, they couldn't actually talk about it because
that would be bad.
There's a court case. It's illegal for them to do that. Well, they couldn't do that. They would be charged. And so, it's so weird that they simply said, we can't talk about it. And if there was something there, we wouldn't. That seems information control to me.
That's what that seems like.
That seems like trying to set a narrative to set expectations low because they're like, you trust me. I'm Dan Bongingo.
Bongino. I'm Don Bongingo.
He's
a spy. He goes by different names.
All right. But
apologies to all the Dan Bongino fans out there. Kyle's
Bongino.
Parents
I did
included.
That one on purpose. That was on purpose. Bongino. So when... if you're that guy, you have earned this public media trust, and you roll out and you say, I would have told you, but you couldn't have. What's happening? What is going on? That is so bizarre, on top of the, like, you know, policeman of the world thing, on top of everything else. It just leaves me with way more questions than it does anything else.
Yeah. That's just Cash staring back at us on the TV right now.
Can we change that? I can't focus with his eyeballs.
I thought we were going to a cliff.
Blinking at me.
And it's just Cash Patel just peering
into
my soul.
Were we going to a cliff?
Yeah, so the next one is...
I was just looking deeply into Cash Patel's eyes.
So we also have Operation Restoring Justice, and they've kind of detailed out a little bit of that and some of their successes in the area, so it's a bit of a high point.
Door, it's on Amazon. That's going to be us. This is a huge job. And Maria, not only does it destroy innocence, I said to everyone in the room, say week two or three when Cash and I put Restoring Justice together to go get these mutts off the street, these kiddie pornographers and these animals, right? I said to everyone in the room, I said, you know why it's going to matter to America? Because everyone in the room is a child or a parent, right? There's no immaculate conceptions here, right? I love Jesus, but there's no one in the room, right? I said, this matters. And not only that, it creates generational crime because abused kids then become abusers in a lot of these cases. I said, we have a chance right now. I said, we got to go make their lives painful, these bad guys. And we went and we locked up in a month, what, 400? We saved 115 kids. And you haven't even seen the beginning because those 400, a lot of them are talking. And when you log onto that network next, you have no idea what we're doing. You think you're safe in your dark web? I promise you are absolutely not safe. You have no idea what we can do.
putting off serious Liam Neeson vibes right there.
Yeah, I will find you.
I have a very special set of skills.
I was a Secret Service agent. I've developed my skills.
Yeah, but I mean, it's a big W, right? 400 arrests, 115
huge.
Children.
I mean, I think that's great. I think of all the things the FBI could do, this is top of the list for sure.
Yeah, it's probably the best role for the FBI is these types of crimes.
Definitely,
right? especially internet crimes, right? Like your local PD is probably less equipped for that. So there's a certain scale, there's a certain like technology barrier, there's certain things like that, especially if you can partner with the NSA to do that. I mean, that's more sensible.
Yeah. This trafficking, all that stuff, because there's a huge trafficking problem in the United States that people don't really contend with. Happens all over the place. So like that to me is like, if we're to have an FBI, that's the role, that type of stuff is what they should be focused on.
For sure.
Because like those require larger information networks, and then getting people like, you know, interrogating these people right here, like he said that it's going to lead to way more arrests, right? That's the type of stuff that I feel like the FBI has a role in, because your local PD is just not going to be able to
deal
with that
do
stuff.
Yeah, they can't do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they did get around to the Hoover Building and that claim, and this is actually a bit of a promise kept. I have actually appreciate, and especially when it comes to dealing with budget cuts, and how he answered this was actually really great. So another high point.
Do this, but I'm going to announce it on your show anyway. This FBI is leaving the Hoover Building because this building is unsafe for our workforce, and we want the workforce.
You just gave up a big nugget.
We want the American men and women to know, if you're going to come work at the premier law enforcement agency in the world, we're going to give you a building that's commensurate with that. And that's not this place.
I mean, the Trump administration has proposed a $500 million cut to the FBI's funding for 2026. How are you going to maintain the effectiveness if you don't have the resources?
We got to get smart and stop wasting money. We got to stop thinking up fantasies in Maryland and building $5 billion new buildings. We have people who are able to do the job on the budgets we're given. And we are going to work with the president and his team, because he and his team know they have to budget for an entire government. I just got to worry about one agency. So does he. Yeah. And their job is 10 times harder than ours. They have to say, DOD's got to get this. What about DOT? What about Justice and Marshals? And what about Treasury? So we know that they are smartly putting together a budget. And we also know that there's ramifications from people here that weaponize this place and a cost to that. We're always going to fight for our personnel and for as much money as we can get. But I think when we show you real-time examples of getting out of places like this, because just to fix this building would cost billions of dollars only for a couple of years of runway, it shows you that we're serious about saving and being good stewards of the taxpayer dollars and hiring more agents instead of.
Yeah. So, and the hiring more agents was the most like, wait a minute.
Whoa. You just said smart and save money and then hire more agents.
Yeah. I think what he's saying is cut costs in areas where they're like not useful or not effective, right? So like the FBI's actual role, like you need more agents or whatever, but like get rid of all this other stuff, like refinancing for billions of dollars into a new, like into the building.
I totally
right?
agree with the building.
I think that's what he means.
And for sure, but like let's just maybe see what the 1,500 new agents in the field do before we go and just start like stocking up on more.
And right? Once again, Kyle, but the sleight of hand there is we're going to save money on the building, but then we're going to hire more agents.
So they're not right. actually saving
but
any
you're
money.
Actually saving money.
But I think what they're saying is, total budget going down though, right?
No, yeah. There's a $500 million proposal from the Trump administration that isn't in the CR. So, I mean, it's literally talking about, you know, how many angels can dance on the head of a pin, because it's completely policy irrelevant. But, you know, it's good that he answered like, we'll take a $500 million budget cut.
Yeah, for sure.
That's a good thing. And saving money on the building, that's
absolutely
a good thing.
$500 million seems like such small potatoes. What is the FBI budget?
Oh, I have no
what
idea.
What is actually the budget?
Billions and billions, yeah.
Yeah, that for... In my mind, that feels like a haircut, but maybe the budget's not as big as I think it is.
So for fiscal year 25, it's $11.3 billion in direct budget authority.
That's that's actually a pretty sizable percentage.
It's a lot of money in total terms.
It's like 4%. It'd be like 4% cut.
Okay, so that includes $11.3 billion for salaries and expenses to support 37,000 positions, which includes 13,000. Special agents, 3,300 intelligence analysts, and 20,000 professional staff. What is professional staff?
Secretaries and stuff.
Damn, that's a lot of secretaries.
Yeah. Paper pushers.
Whew.
Yeah.
So janitors,
like, a lot of that stuff's where I feel like. Oof.
Yeah. It's a support administration. It's HR, right? It's, you know, all that stuff.
Can we get robots to do that? Can't AI do those jobs now?
Can we please? Yeah. HR AI would be great.
HR AI.
Yeah.
At the FBI.
Someone do that.
That'll be the name of our show once we replace ourselves with artificial intelligence versions.
That'll
of
be
ourselves.
Our second channel where we just have it run. We just let whatever run the show for us.
Sounds terrifying.
Yeah. So then next on the docket was January 6th.
Yeah.
So
that's a big one.
And this is where things start getting more like
let down. Let downtown.
You'll see.
We'll see. It's just as we get through Jan 6, Epstein, et cetera, it's just like, man, I was hoping for
This is the cliff you guys were talking about where it's like, oh, this is going pretty good, and then you just start blackpilling the whole thing.
Well, it's not even that it was just going good. It's just like, okay, it's an interview.
Yeah, and now it's right. Like, oh, fuck.
And you're just like, oh, come on, guys. We believed in you. We put our faith in you.
So there is, as... It seems that I find myself in a similar situation as Russiagate. Because on January 6th in the prior Trump administration, I was the chief of staff to the Department of Defense. And I spent 4 years in a minor fortune litigating the truth because people politicized what actually happened on January 6th. And we now know unequivocally that President Trump lawfully authorized the deployment of the National Guard. And me, as the head of the Office of Secretary of Defense, with the Secretary of Defense, took that action. When it finally came in, because it had to have the governor and mayor of D.C.'s approval on it. That's the way the law works. And once it finally came in on January 6th, remember, we offered to them days beforehand, and they rejected it. And we've put out the letters, and your show has done great coverage showing how it was rejected. We mobilized the fastest coal start in Washington, D.C. since World War II, and the largest occupation of D.C. by the National Guard since the American Revolution. That's what happened on January 6th. But what you and your viewers want to know, now that we've beat back that disinformation campaign with actual truth, is what was the FBI doing? Well, we got answers coming. We just found a trove of information.
Soon.
And it's on its way to Capitol Hill right now. And they've asked, and they're getting them, and you're getting answers on January 6th. You're getting answers on what sourcing was utilized, what money was utilized, how many assets were utilized, who made those decisions. You're getting it. We can only control the FBI, but you're getting it from the FBI.
Were there FBI agents undercover egging people on?
Like I said, that answer is coming.
God.
And it's on its way to Congress.
I saw it. I saw the portfolio of information. We dug far and wide to find it. And I'm pretty sure now we have a conclusive, definitive answer. But you and the public are going to have it. You're going to see it in writing over to Capitol Hill. But I just want to be sure we're clear, having been an agent and a police officer, there is a difference between an agent. I know you know this. I don't mean to sound ridiculous. An agent, meaning a trained GS 1811 federal agent, and a source or an asset. There's a difference. So when you see the material, which I promise you is coming.
He's setting that up. Right.
Information control op. Mm-hmm. Right? Because so obviously the upside is that this is a strong statement and they've literally denied that there are any assets on the ground before.
This is actually a big push. Like they're preparing us for FBI assets. It's like, it's not like there's actually like, yes, you are a paid FBI, like a person that works at the FBI building. It's these people that we're manipulating.
Right. Like the Ray Epps for. Kind of figures who were telling people to go into the Capitol and then, mysteriously ended up not getting charged with anything.
Until the internet raised hell about it for a very long time.
Right.
And it kind of got a thing and it wasn't much.
Yeah.
It does remind me, because I remember making the asset versus agent point like a year ago on the podcast. I remember having a bunch of people reach out to me after. I was like, I never even thought about the difference between an agent and an asset.
Yeah.
So a lot of people just like, when you blame the FBI, they just think it's just like the person paid for by the FBI.
Sure.
Well, and my prediction here is that the vagueness of asset mm-hmm. will now be their leverage point, where
it's a very
the difference
broad
between
term.
An informant and someone who's an agent provocateur. Mm-hmm. And what we're talking about are agent provocateurs. That guy at the Capitol, all blacked out. You can't see a thing about it. He breaks windows and the camera's on him, and then he sees someone else. He's being filmed, and someone said, hey, what are you doing that for? And he pushes a guy and then walks off. What was that? Mm-hmm. Like, that's weird. That's weird shit. You know, that could be Black Lives Matter, just doing agent provocateur stuff.
Antifa or any of those groups, right?
Or it could be the FBI. I want to know, and this all feels like to me, like they're moving the ball subtly so that they can then set it up. Well, there were assets, but they were informants.
Right. But what about the guy in all black who is seen on CCTV footage from inside the Capitol fist bumping a Capitol police officer?
Yeah. What's that? Oh, what's they're just
that?
Being friendly.
What is that?
They're not going to account for any of those individual circumstances. They're going to say, there were assets on the ground and they're not going to find it. And then press, they're going to say they're informants. Right? I'm not going to see the document that said XYZ person was an asset who was, you know, instructed by ex FBI agent to be a agent provocateur, right? Okay. That's not going to happen.
I have a question. So these guys are Trump loyalists, I think you could say through and through. They're MAGA dudes, right? They both have personal friendships with the president, as they said earlier in this interview. What is their incentive now that they're in these positions? What is their incentive to not reveal the entire truth about what happened on J6?
It's internal dynamics within the FBI. It's you get into the FBI and you're literally working for the intel agency, and someone else at the FBI says, "I have this thing that you did." You know, it could be
it's
control.
Like blackmail
it
stuff.
It could be.
Or,
you know, that's what the FBI does.
Of it could too, just be like very cautiously moving forward too, and people wanting it to like feed me more kind of a thing. And like some of the stuff, like I'm not as annoyed by the asset kind of goalpost moving here, because like I see that that's actually what I assumed was the case, was actually that it's not like actual FBI agents going in, it's whoever is being cultivated by the FBI. And it's kind of like how we've seen with social media and stuff like that. Everything kind of gets outsourced, all the stuff. And then there's kind of like plausible deniability, and that's kind of how intel operations work, right? So now the question will be is, when we see what the assets were, how are they going to approach that? Like, are they going to do something like Dave's saying, we're just like, it wasn't us. It was like an informant that we worked with in the past. And then they went rogue, or, you know, like, does it become something like that?
Right.
Or is it actually like, because what I would like to see is, assuming this is true, is they're so-and-so high up at the FBI coordinated with this group to make this happen for this result, right? Like, that's what I want to see written down in paper.
And then that person at the FBI gets dealt with through the justice system for
dealt with.
But of course, that person at the FBI.
Not gonna want to buy a movie ticket, son.
But it's gonna ruin your summer.
But of course, that person at the FBI would be doing something very illegal, and therefore wouldn't leave a paper trail behind.
Exactly.
Right. So therefore, what is your investigation into agent provocateurs at January 6th?
Right.
Is that a thing, or is it just this generic, soft, vague? What was the FBI involvement in January 6th? As long as the accusation is vague, they can wiggle through it.
Right.
And that's what I worry about, is because KYC is what you do.
Know your customer.
Or cover your ass.
KYA.
KYA.
Nice.
Also know your customer. Yeah,
kind of true.
Yeah. Is what you do in intelligence agencies when you're caught doing something wrong. Plausible deniability is covering your ass.
It's actually really unfortunate, because this Jan 6 happened just before I lost my Twitter account. And I had so much live footage bookmarked from Jan 6 of like black vans showing up and people in masks jumping out and like in going into the crowd and stuff. Cause like I was glued to the screen that day watching things, and I bookmarked
that's
so
probably
much
why
stuff.
You got banned. They're like, this guy is going to know some stuff.
This guy's a knower. He's a knower. This guy's a knower.
He's noticing bookmarking some shit. All the wrong
this
things.
This guy's going to be asking too many questions. Cause I had so much of that stuff, and it'd be so, and I've gone back and searched for so much, and just that's old Twitter.
So much
scrubbed.
Stuff got scrubbed. Yeah.
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 Yeah. So the next is the creme de la creme, the ultimate Jeffrey Epstein. Mm-hmm. So
we kind of teased this one.
We teased this one up, and everybody knows you've coming. Seen the clip, but we got to show it because it has to be discussed, because the way they do it is makes me even more skeptical, even more confident, maybe.
It's confident in my skepticism.
You said Jeffrey Epstein committed suicide. People don't believe it.
Well, I mean, listen, they have a right to their opinion, but as someone who has worked as a public defender, as a prosecutor, who's been in that prison system, who's been in the Metropolitan Detention Center, who's been in segregated housing, you know a suicide when you see one, and that's what that was.
I don't know about that.
He killed himself. I've seen the whole file. He killed himself.
I know it's hard work. But you promoted Steven Jensen.
Yeah, that's all we wanted.
That's all. That's it.
That's literally
that's all that they
it.
Do. Yeah.
The most intriguing thing that the internet has demanded answers to for years, and that's all they give it.
Yes.
That is infuriating.
I've seen I've seen the documents. He killed himself.
Trust me, bro.
Trust me.
That, okay, I can't even, I have to process this. That was that was more than a letdown. They,
Right. I mean, so for the Trump loyalist, for the person who really trusted that what we were going to get was some accountability here, that is a huge black pill, right? I mean, and just think about the scale of this question too. 52% of the American public believe that Jeffrey Epstein was murdered to prevent him from testifying against powerful people with whom he associated, according to a Washington Examiner poll. Pretty much the rest of them, we're just not sure. You know, they just, you know.
Yeah,
that's
unclear.
Only about 12% thought that he...
They just bought the line that he did.
Self-death.
Okay. We've already said it enough times. I don't think you need to dance
but
around that one.
Just think about it, though. I mean, the sheer chutzpah of... we looked at it, and this is where... This you just believe us. And I'm like, if that works...
It's like they're not even trying to convince us.
Yeah,
that's the thing about it. It's just like... it almost makes me... It's just like, for those of you that know, they're like giving like a wink and a nod, like... We're just saying what we got to say right now. Like that's almost what it feels
that's
like.
There's
to me.
A Mossad gun pointed to the back of your head is what it sounds like.
That's what it feels like.
The
what
way Cash's eyes were poking out, he's like, do not fuck this up.
But they always do that. You never know. Those eyes, they don't change.
Those eyes don't They're lie, unblinky. Bro.
But that's a
He's
that's
like,
a
I've
thing.
Seen some shit, bro.
I mean, I echo that sentiment, Kyle and David. I feel like this statement is so short and so manufactured and so just like, this is what you're going to say, that there's so much more behind this that they may know that they can't say.
Mm-hmm.
And what file did Dan Bongino see? Did he see a file that was handed to him and says, this is the file on Jeffrey Epstein killed himself?
Was it just the one on Pam Bondi's desk, the real song?
Yeah, that's right. What I worry about. Like,
open and shut.
Yeah. Open. I guess he killed himself, guys.
Yep. That's what they're telling me. Now, so there's message discipline, but then you ask the question, why is there message discipline here?
Yeah.
Why am I not hearing, because people elected Donald J. Trump in part because they were interested in this, even as Donald J. Trump, the entire time of the election cycle, was always very cagey on Epstein specifically. He's like, UFOs, no problem. We'll release it. JFK, no problem. MLK, no problem. But Epstein, you know, people have things.
He was always cagey on it. Like Trump himself was always cagey on it. Or he would shift to being like, what about the MLK files?
Yeah, right. But
best I can do is MLK.
And of course, that might have something to do with the fact that he was, you know, proximal friends, acquaintances, you know, well, I mean, there are quotes that suggest that he had a long-term friendship with Epstein for some time. I mean, I don't know.
He did kick him out of Mar-a-Lago, but there is just like, there's a lot of evidence of like New York mob blackmail rings that exist that Trump was alongside or adjacent to that existed at the time, like in the real estate business. And so like there's some sort of game that exists there that we as the public just don't understand. That's what I've always believed. There's something, and I think there's different factions within that game. And
right.
I suspect Trump and Epstein are in separate factions of that game, but I'm not entirely sure on that. Like, that's just my suspicion.
And of course, if you're Mossad and Jeffrey Epstein knew that he was involved with the mob somehow, and they have that information, they say you can't release anything on Epstein because we've been given this information. Or someone else, any of the Five Eyes could work. It could be Canada. I don't know. But somebody in the intelligence agencies adjacent to Epstein has the information on Trump that he might have been involved with those folks or adjacent to or whatever, at least enough for a bad media cycle of 3 years that would undermine his agenda. He might put that on the far back burner and say, guys, the talking point is you looked at the file and there's nothing there. It's a no there there.
No, like I'm not even like maybe there's stuff with Trump specifically within that, but I'm also just thinking like I think there's like a bigger game that exists that Epstein was a person involved, you know, and so like that's what they're shielding is whatever that larger game was.
Yes,
that's more so. Like I'm not even necessarily implicating in like Trump and like being directly implicated by Epstein. Like I'm just saying, I think that there's the game is what they're covering up for.
So yeah. If they saw the file and they were like, he killed himself, then it just begs the question, because we just have to trust you, bro, now, is, okay, how good was the autopsy? Like, was the autopsy reading reasonable and conclusive? Well, Steven Crowder, think of whatever you will, you know, good guy, bad guy, whatever. But he did this really awesome, you know, skit talking about this issue of specifically when it comes to the physical evidence of what we understand of could he, is it possible that he could have killed himself in the first place? Like, it's not speculating who killed him. It's not speculating anything else other than was it materially possible? Specifically into this, and they're going to dive into the details of kind of what they're trying to prove here with this clip.
First, on the outset, the number that we are trying to hit on that was a newtometer scale. My engineer's not here with me right now. It's 55 kilograms, 121 pounds of force. 55 kilograms, 121 pounds of force is what we're looking to hit to recreate a scenario in which Jeffrey Epstein's suicide is even plausible. Is even remotely possible, and that's the low end. Keep in mind the story that we've been told, as you know from the New York Times, Washington Post, is that Jeffrey Epstein knelt toward the floor with enough force that he broke several bones in his neck on a rope that he fashioned himself from orange bedsheets. Some people thought the bedsheets were paper. That's not true. Apparently, they were actually real bedsheets. Keep in mind, too, something that a lot of people may not know, that when administering death by hanging, the number to ensure death that has always been used historically is 1,000 to 1,250 foot-pounds of force.
Now, why aren't you using that number, Stephen?
I'm gonna get to that in just a second.
And isn't there something about the hyoid bone?
Yeah. I'm glad that you brought that up. Many in the media, they've tried to paint kind of people who are even remotely skeptical of the Epstein suicide as conspiracy theorists. And they often point to the hyoid bone, claiming that Jeffrey Epstein fractured that bone. It only requires 35 pounds of force to fracture. And of course, that makes it seem as though it's very easy, very plausible, the most likely scenario that Jeffrey Epstein hung and killed himself. I believe it's a red herring for several reasons. Couldn't be less relevant to this. For one, the measurement being cited that people are often using, this was in a laboratory where they took a hyoid from a cadaver and put it into a vise, right? That's not the same as a real world scenario where you've got cartilage and tissue and neck fat, as I well know. Then number two, most importantly, Jeffrey Epstein had three fractures in his neck. And you will see us trying to recreate that here in a second. Three fractures, including thyroid cartilage, which is much more difficult to fracture than the hyoid bone. So let me kind of paint a scenario. If you get into a car wreck, right? You get jostled around and you break your pinky, you break your wrist, but you also break your femur. I can't just recreate a scenario where I break a pinky and say, well, that's good enough for me, call it a day. We need to recreate a scenario in which the most severe fracture is accounted for. And that is what we are trying to do this evening, mimicking the force that would be required to create all three fat fractures that were found in the suicide. It's also important to note, only 8%.
No, what if his bones just did that? Yeah. It's like that meme of that tweet of the CIA. Kennedy. Was like, what if JFK's head just did that?
It just kind of exploded.
Just like a spontaneous neck break.
Yeah.
It happens.
So we'll get it. We're going to show kind of how his experimentation went. But in order to have the context of this, you have to understand the difference between Jeffrey Epstein and Steven Crowder. So their tale of the tape kind of demonstrates that. Of course, you know, Steven's both younger, heavier, with a larger, the same size neck. Interesting.
Yeah, same size neck. Okay.
Wow.
Suspicious at best.
Yeah. Reach around. Get it? Yeah. Hey. But yeah, criminal record undefeated.
Record career pedophile stats.
Oh my God. Two ties?
What? Two ties.
Two ties. What? I don't know what that means.
It might have been the people who sued him, I guess. I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, so, I guess, yeah, those would be there was two court cases.
Oh, yeah,
that's right.
Okay. Yeah. So there you have it. So it would be much easier, of course, is the takeaway, obviously, from this, for Stephen to create the amount of force required by his body weight, right? Because your body weight creates more force due to gravity as you lean against the, you know, the neutrometer. So the first try, we're not going to demonstrate because he does the kneel down. He does the thing in Washington Post. And just for brevity, he generates about 30 pounds doing that.
So not even quite enough to break the weakest bone, the hyoid?
Yeah, right. Not even close to breaking the neck bone.
The thyroid tissue that he referred to.
Yes.
Gotcha. Okay.
Correct. And then this is a second try to get it where he goes off the rails a bit and he actually achieves it, but you'll have to see how.
Have the signal. As Mr. Knieven leans, we are looking for 55 kilograms. We have 25 on the rope.
Oh, okay.
Oh, and
that guy
Mr. Knieven appears to have collapsed. Oh, he's
How about that?
He is simulating having been choked out.
What am I hanging here?
So he's only at 25.
Yeah. Again, we have peaked again at 25.
What if I go, hold on. What if I go like this? Rope.
Nope.
Okay,
Gerald, you have to
wheelbarrow
me.
Okay.
You have
to wheelbarrow
me. Mr. Carter,
here we go.
Requesting a wheelbarrow move.
No. 55. Takes his hands off the ground.
56.
And then he gets it.
56. He achieved 56 on the neck and 58 on the rope.
You're out.
Oh.
Wow.
So he had to, like, he had to be pulled in order to be able to have this happen.
Yeah, literally lift him off the ground. Yeah. And that's only to break the lightest bone to do so.
Not the whole three fractures that he would need.
Yeah.
And isn't it, I remember back, it's been a while since I've seen this, but I remember there was a guy who like investigates various types of murders and things like that, who did like a whole analysis of it and came to the conclusion that it would have had, like, the most common way for one of the very specific fractures to occur was via strangling. Mm-hmm. Right, which is just like when you see that, you're like, okay, what are we talking about here? Right, it's also a thing where Epstein, just as a figure, like maybe this is me psychoanalyzing him, he doesn't seem like the guy that would do this unless he was like really pressed for it. You know what I mean? Like, he doesn't seem like that guy. And my understanding is he was getting some like various special treatment inside the cells as well, too. Like, he was like getting these like alone times out in the lounge and things like that, and where he was getting like people coming to see him and things.
Hmm.
If I'm remembering that time period,
was he getting massages?
I don't think it was that.
But is like, that why the cameras were off?
Yeah, it's been so long since the actual event, but I vaguely remember that being a case. Was there something about him? Like, it wasn't necessarily the worst experience at the time for him.
I don't know. There was also reports that he couldn't sleep and all these other, like, he's in this desperate situation and he's, you know, depressed and all that kind of stuff. But I mean, regardless, there's so many additional questions. I mean, it's JFK on steroids, right? I mean,
it's also like his brother's gone out and done big interviews with like Tucker and PBD and things like that. And his brother's like hyper convinced that, that Jeff killed himself.
Yeah. Daily Mail put out an article today, said, "My brother Jeffrey Epstein didn't kill himself, and I have evidence. Trump's FBI boss doesn't know what he's talking about." But that's a paid article on Daily Mail, and I didn't get to that.
You can watch Mark Epstein on, and he actually, like, one of the weird things with it is, and maybe it's whatever, is that he never shows his face on the interviews that he does, and he's done interviews with people like Tucker and Patrick Bet-David. So I'm assuming it's actually him, but you never actually see his face. So you're kind of like, what if this is propaganda? Yeah. I don't know.
Well, what propaganda would it serve? Like, it's an unclear motive.
I don't know.
Yeah. The thing is that there's so many things that you can't account for. And you're like, why didn't have a cellmate? Why did the cameras go out? You know, did the guards fall asleep? Is that a real story? Is that possible? That can't be true. The guards can't have fallen asleep.
Yeah, it's true.
We have nicotine. Bad, it's possible, right? Well, to stay awake.
That's the weird thing too, is like the guards fell asleep. And you're like, if I was like writing a story, that would be the most convenient plot point to just throw in there, where you're just like, oh, come on, man. It would be a little bit more creative than that.
Yeah,
dude.
It's so trite. You wouldn't put it in a story. Yeah. It's like, no, that's just too easy. Yeah, it doesn't work.
It's like, get better guards. I don't know. You're in this. What is happening here? Yeah. Like, fire them? I don't know.
So, like, the material evidence has worked. There's a clear motive for an outside figure to do it. There's all of this very convenient, you know, coincidences. And then we're just supposed to look at Kash Patel when he says, trust me, bro, and be like, oh, yeah, I trust you.
And he's not like trying to convince you of anything. Like, he's just like, no, I saw it. It's not there.
It's the lowest effort thing possible.
It's like, what? Like, maybe explain us the current story a little bit better. Like, what's your understanding of the official story? Tell us that, and then we can like poke holes in that or something.
And that's like the lack of accountability of any sort, and the fact that the press person just goes, oh, okay, cool. Well, it is hard. It's difficult to know, and just moves on. That's why they're doing Fox News, right? Is because they can get the cover that they need, and that's why it's such a tragedy.
Yeah, get Bongino
on
Rogan.
These are new media figures who built a career around making this case systematically. Bongino is known for this, right? I mean, like, this is a thing that he was doing.
We needed Dan Bongino to interview Dan Bongino.
Yeah, right.
I think that's a great idea.
Yeah. I'll step in for him. I'm almost, we're both as bald, but that's what's so insane is they've literally purchased, by bringing in the administration, someone with credibility that they built by trying to actually navigate the truth, and now ask them to lie to the public.
Mm.
And that is a giant black pill that will kill the movement. And it's tragic to watch the Trump administration intentionally do that. in order to cover their ass.
It's all coming soon.
Yeah. I mean, the possible white pill here is that there is more to this than can be disclosed now, and there is some truth to the sooning that we've been experiencing on this episode.
For other issues, for this, is this the last we're going to hear? Are we really going to get more? Is there any reason why Pam Bondi's going to do anything now? I mean, like, why was it? I'm sorry to kill your momentum
fine.
I'm coping right now. You know, when Jeffrey Epstein was being prosecuted in Florida for the massage thing, not the flights, but the massage, they have a Netflix documentary on it where it was all underage women and there was, you know, sexual activity going on with the underage women there. And the prosecutor in Florida said he belongs to intelligence. That's why he didn't, you know, he gave him a slap on the wrist and didn't do anything about it of substance. What was that? That's what people want to know.
What was that?
What was it?
Yeah. Who, what, when, where, how? Like, tell me that. And that has to be at the FBI because that was brought to the FBI. There has to be a record of it.
Mm-hmm.
So did they talk to the CIA and they're the said it? Did they talk to another foreign agency and they're the ones that said it? That's the information we need because that is the stuff that goes to the clients. And now we have a situation where Ghislaine Maxwell is being in prison for being a pimp with no Johns. And who are they? And how are we not getting that? Not getting that list, right? Because we got the tapes or we don't. I don't know. Daily Mail said they just all went missing. I don't know what happened to the tapes. That was your job at the FBI. If someone doesn't lose their job because they lost the tapes of the most prolific child predator ever, and no one loses their job over that? That's insane.
Well, and it's the thing, too, where it's just like, if you're somebody from the outside just connecting the dots as we see them, as we can see them, through the Maxwell connection, it's just so painfully obvious the Israel and British ties, like both of them. And, you know, we already had the weird interview with the prince way back in the day where he's like all sweating profusely and everything. Prince Harry? Henry?
Yeah.
Henry?
Not Harry.
Harry.
No. Andrew?
Andrew?
Andrew.
Andrew. Andrew.
Yeah, Prince Andrew.
Andrew. Yep. But just like the Maxwell connection is so laden with both MI6 and Mossad. Like it's so apparent when you're just looking at it. And then there's the connection of like, well, what, is there a higher intelligence game that's going on that's also involving the CIA and et cetera? Like probably. You know, and it's just Jeffrey Epstein's just such a curious figure that was dealing with arms dealing before he got into the pimp business too, where you're like, I don't know. He's just a very curious figure where when you're looking at it, you're like, what the hell is this thing?
Yeah.
And then also the connections of Anthony Blinken's stepfather was the lawyer for Robert Maxwell, Ghislaine Maxwell's father, too, where you're like, who are these people? Yeah. Like, why are they all connected? What's going on here?
So the movement forward has to be, you cannot let this up. We cannot allow this to become the answer. This can't be the answer. If the MAGA right wants to have any integrity whatsoever and actually a meaningful movement that is actually looking at trying to bring about a constitutional government or a limited government or something representing making America great again, you cannot allow this to be the answer. Because if you do, it's dead. Like the amount of people, 52%, very few things will allow 52% of the American public to agree on something and almost all of the rest be, I don't know.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, very few things. That's you're ranking over 80% of the people who are not buying the official story. And if you allow that to happen, you're going to do the same thing that we did with the JFK files. It's going to be perennial and you cannot let it go, because if you do, you're killing your own movement.
Well, that's the big thing with both Epstein, Jan 6, the assassination attempts, all of them. It's like, OK, I don't know what the official story, like, I don't know what the real story is, but the official one's clearly not it. Like, and that's just like my take on all of it. You're like, something is going on here.
Yes.
And just giving us these answers for, like, we live in the age of the internet. You can't really hide as much information as you want to be able to hide from us. It's like, we're looking at it and just like, if all these conspiracies are popping up, like there's a reason why all these conspiracies are popping up. It's because things aren't making sense. The dots don't connect real well.
And I don't think they're playing the game out. Mm-hmm. When they're done with the Trump administration, is their plan to retire? If it's to go back to podcasting, is anyone ever going to take Dan Bongino seriously, you know, ever again?
I mean, I think you're exactly right. It depends on the internet's tenacity to not let this issue go. And I mean, I think if there's one issue that the internet's been pretty tenacious about, it's the Epstein issue.
Yeah.
I think maybe if there is a minor white pill here, and I'm trying my best to pull a white pill out of this really black pill interview, the internet will stick to this, and we count on you to stick to it.
Well, one final thing on that too is, you know, I am reminded back to a lot of these figures totally lied to Congress when they were going through their appointments on like their beliefs and things like that too. So like a lot of this is there's politics involved and a lot of things that the public's not privy to. And there's like, that's the one area of potential having faith in people in some of these figures where you're like, not everything can come out right away. Like some things are going to be obfuscated. There's like spy games going on and you're like, hopefully they continue to drizzle out information, but we'll see, right? Like there's complete warranted reason to be skeptical, especially about this stuff. Cause everything from the FBI and the Attorney General office has just been like, there's too much sooning. I need a little bit more than that.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Well, we can only hope. Please let us know in the comments. Do you think that Kash Patel and Dan Bongino are telling the truth?
Would they make a good buddy cop movie?
Or would they make a good buddy cop movie? And if so, what would it be called? That's what we mostly want to know. And also, to join the Discord, we'll have an ongoing conversation about this issue and many others, so we'd love to have you join us there. For David Rand, for Kyle Mack, I'm Joe Sheehan. This is Human Reaction. We'll see you in the next one. Thanks for tuning in to Human Reaction. Please be sure to like, follow, subscribe, and give us a review on your podcast platform of choice. And if you want to become a member and support the show financially, check out humanreactionpod.com. And remember, there's my cold open. Shit. Don't do that, Bennett. Please.